Blog Talk Radio.
Does it ever feel like everyone's got more going than you do?
Oops.
That everyone is smart.
So you're Al Myers' kid?
Yes, I am.
You look pretty stupid to me.
Thank you.
You say the best skier in town just ran off with your girlfriend? Even your younger brother does better than you do? And that nobody even cares?
That broke up with me.
Oh, that's nice.
Well, you might be right.
Oh!
But remember one thing.
I haven't even been to New York City.
Nobody was ever better off dead.
The truth is, I could out-ski you any day of the week.
Oh, really?
Yeah, you want a race, I'll take you on any day, sucker.
Go that way, really fast. If something gets in your way, turn.
All you need is guts.
All right! Now turn!
I'm gonna race, I'm gonna lose, and I'm gonna die, in that order.
Go!
And you'll never doubt yourself again.
He's skiing on one ski!
Better off dead.
That's a real shame when folks be throwing away a perfectly good white boy like that.
Welcome to the Movie Geeks United celebration of the summer of 1985 at the movies. Tonight, Savage Steve Holland, the writer-director of the cult classic from 1985, Better Off Dead.
Better Off Dead is one of those films that everybody knows. It always comes up. It's a favorite. I mean, this movie has survived. Did you expect it to have this kind of afterlife?
No, and it's funny because how sweet it is to hear from you guys, because like the, part of the reason why I was like, when people say that to me, I'm like so excited because it got so beat up when it first came out. Like it got the worst reviews, and it was supposed to be like this dead thing, like that would never be see the light of day ever again after the first weekend. And so it's so funny because I really believed in it, and I thought it was really funny, and it still makes me laugh really hard all this, every time I see it. And And I'm sad and lonely and watched a lot. So I'm pretty sure that it was funnier than that one weekend where it came out and then just disappeared. So I'm just so grateful that like people finally caught on. It's funny things. It's like VHS saved it, you know, or like cable, you know, or HBO saved it. Otherwise, it would have been you never would have heard of it.
So let me find out a little bit about you previous to Better Off Dead, because that was your first feature film. When did the bug, the cinema bug, bite you? Where did that come from?
You know, I was always making movies. My grandma bought me like the Super 8 camera, which was the coolest thing. But that was like in fourth grade, so I'd always do these things. I don't know if you guys did this, but like you get your G.I. Joes and you light them on fire, things like that. And
I did that with, but not so much as G.I. Joes, Micronauts, and Star Wars figures.
Well, there you go. I mean,
my brothers destroyed the G.I. Joes. Before I got it. No, it was a horrific night. They, like, just really, they took, like, a bunch of scotch tape, and they basically tore them apart. So
that's why you have them, I mean, to destroy them, right?
Right.
I was always upset. I was never the one who got to do that. But I did it to everything else, though.
Oh, that's funny. Well, yeah, I mean, I would have, like, my sister running towards a car, and then I'd have, like, a G.I. Joe with a little wig on it get run over or something like that, you know? But that's really how it started, and then what I learned is then my sister wouldn't get beat up anymore after a while, she quit. So I had to start learning to draw, to animate stuff, and it was that animation stuff that kind of got like a high school teacher to notice me and then kind of help me get into CalArts, which was the California Institute of the Arts, which, because I kind of didn't know what I was going to do for college or anything, because I just wanted to come to Hollywood and make movies, and she suggested CalArts, and it all worked out pretty good.
So you attended CalArts. A film program, or was it an animation program? What was it?
it was really cool because it was called film graphics, so it wasn't exactly animation and it wasn't exactly film. Some of the teachers were the people that, way back before you were born, they did, like, the Star Wars stuff and did, you know, some of that stuff that was so cutting edge back then, like mats, you know, and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
So it was kind of cool because then I had to add my stupid cartoons. And, you know, it's funny, I was kind of a failure there because I really probably should have been in the Disney program, Disney Animation, which is where a lot of really good people came from. Like, I think John Lasseter was in that and Tim Burton and stuff. That were in these really cool, like they learned to really animate by hand really well.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing was that the thing I was in called film graphics was way more experimental, you know, learning techniques, like I said, matte paintings and stuff like that. So you could just make, like, you know, an animation of a hamster nailed to a wall or something stupid, and the teacher goes, this is genius, you know. So I don't think I learned a lot, but I spent a lot of time experimenting or making my little cartoons, and it kind of paid off, I guess, because I got into film festivals and stuff like that.
So where does that lead to an opportunity to write and direct your first feature?
Oh, see, this is a really crazy story because it was about 2 years after CalArts that I graduated, and I didn't know, like, things that I know now I didn't know then. Like, I was like, wow, this is taking forever to get my first feature to direct it, because I thought, you know, you just go to Hollywood and start directing, and I didn't realize how hard people work. But I lucked out so bad because I made a couple of short films that opened film festivals and met a lot of cool people. And there's people that kind of helped me. There was, like, Henry Winkler saw this movie that opened a film festival called My 11-Year-Old Birthday Party, which is the true story of when I was 11. I had this birthday party and nobody came but a drunk clown. And I made this little 11-minute movie about it. And so Henry saw it, and then he's like, you know, I'm sure you've heard, the nicest guy in Hollywood, and he actually really is. And he said, do you have any more of these horrible stories about your life? And I'm like, well, as a matter of fact, yeah. When I was, you know, 16, I had this girlfriend, and she dumped me for the ski jock. And he said, we should write that. And so he, like, gave me a little office to write it in at Paramount, which was huge, you know, when you're, like, 23 and you have a little office at Paramount. There was a Xerox machine in it and stuff, but it was still, like, to me, that was huge. And so basically what happened was then I spent another year after that. Like, he didn't make it or anything, but he helped me to write it. Like, he gave me ideas and stuff. And then about a year went by that I tried to sell it. And it was really, like, almost every single day I would go out somewhere or meet with somebody. And most people, like, 98% are liars and don't really have the money they say they have. And so you just get super frustrated.
Mm-hmm.
And I happened to run into this producer named Michael Jaffe, who was this guy who was he worked for this company called CBS Theatrical Films that made films that were really expensive, and they were losing a lot of money. So he was told, like, could you find, like, a teen movie? Because, like, Amy Heckerling had just made Fast Times at Ridgemont High, and it did great,
right.
You know. And it was such a little low-budget movie, and it was making a fortune. So they were like, do you happen to know anybody that has a script that's a teen movie? And by then, like, I had sent it to his office, and he met me and said, like, I have a, you know, teen idea, and I loved your script, Better Off Dead. Would you like to write this movie? And I said, well, wait, if you like Better Off Dead, why don't we just make it? It's already written. And he went, well, let me think about that. And, like, he called me the next day and said, you know what, we're going to do it. And it was like, I thought he was lying. I thought he was just teasing or torturing me. But, no, he was completely serious. He said if I could do it for a budget of, like, I think it was like $3 million, that they'd make the movie. And by then I had storyboarded it, and it was like you could see the movie already done. So he was like, all right, let's take a chance on you, dopey. And he did. And then the movie came out, and nobody saw it, and the reviewers hated it. So that's it. But I was so lucky, guys.
No, but here, no one – all right, you know, I do remember when the movie came out, but we had seen the trailer – I think in front of Pee Wee's Big Adventure.
Yeah.
Laughing.
Oh, wait, you thought it was funny then?
Yeah.
Oh, that's great.
I just stopped laughing because it has some great lines in it, but it also is the movie that really, and I want to make sure I say this very carefully. It is the film that made John Cusack, made him, not typecast him, as a lot of people will want to say in hindsight, but as the film that made him. Because he went on to do many different things in his life.
Yeah.
Even though, if you want to say Hot Tub Time Machine is a homage to all the things that made him what he is, but it is the film that really is the defining film that sets everything up that comes after that. Better Off Dead is really, I don't care who you are, and I mentioned Hot Tub Time Machine, everything owes something to your movie.
That's funny.
Does,
well, I haven't seen it.
You haven't seen Hot Tub?
No, I should... Well, that's so sweet. Thank you for saying that, because I, you know, looking at Q's dog, he like, I loved him in my movie so much. I thought he was just the best he's ever been, and I still look at it and go, I just think he's just fantastic in it, you know. I'm so sorry. I haven't seen Hot Tub Time Machine. I have to see it though. I heard there's some references there. Any blatant ones?
Not so much blatant. You know, you watch a movie like that, and it's got references up to like, I mean, every 80s film, every 80s trend. I mean, you see that in the trailer.
Uh-huh.
You see the trailer. I mean, not that I've ever done acid or anything, but it is a badass flashback. The first half hour, it is painful, to say the least.
Well, it's funny. Like I look at Better Off Dead and some of my dance scenes, and it's like, you know, I didn't do it in the wardrobe because I'm like, I don't know any of that stuff.
Right.
But so then I look at some of the dancing, some of the wardrobe and stuff of the 80s and stuff, and it was really, really, really awful.
But the 80s, now you say that, though. All right, now as someone who grew up in the 80s and everything, you know, we all have this nostalgia for it. We're doing these shows and everything. But let's not forget the fact growing up in the 80s was not all peaches and cream. It was painful.
No, not at all.
It was painful.
Yeah.
Blatantly painful. We can look back now and, oh, we survived. But let's just, the actual experience was painful. But we did have these movies to go to that did serve as a release, as an outlet.
Yeah, totally. I thought it was a great time for films. Are you kidding me? Even like you just mentioned Pee-wees. I mean, that was awesome. And then there was all those. I mean, some of those teen movies were so great, and all the John Hughes stuff. I mean, it was just.
Oh yeah.
I loved going to the movies. It was like, it seemed like, unless I'm remembering this differently, like, yeah, you're right. But I think that's why I think it was so much fun to go to a movie to like get escape all the crap.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Tell me about the experience of making the film and what surprised you about yourself directing your first feature film. It had to be nerve-wracking.
Well, it's weird. It wasn't too bad because I was so used to making my short films, and I'd have like three friends that I'd trick into like working with me to, like, for a bologna sandwich. I mean, literally, like, sometimes, you know, and I'd lose crew people all the time because they'd be like, wait a minute, this sucks. And so, you know, the one thing I remember that blew my mind was, like I said, it was weird enough that a guy said, yeah, we're going to make your movie. But when I pulled up and there was trucks and trucks, you know, if you've ever seen a movie set, like all the equipment and stuff, and there's real people and they help you. It was just mind-blowing. It was so helpful. And, you know, I normally, to save money, had to really plan things out and really had to, like I said, storyboard things so that I knew exactly. For instance, I wouldn't do like a master of some stuff. I would just do, if I needed a close-up on something, I would just shoot that close-up. If someone just said hello in a scene, I wouldn't shoot the whole scene like in a master. I would just shoot that close-up of someone saying hello. Mm-hmm. And so that's a way to save money, you know, because especially back when film, you know, now we're all HD and stuff. But that made it really simple for me to get what I needed. So, like, after the first day, I think the crew, maybe some people expected me to be a jackass, you know, but I really had it down, and I got us out early every day, and it just was actually a really good experience. And I didn't know the kind of pain that can happen when your movie comes out and it doesn't do well and you don't have any friends anymore. Like I just assumed it was going to be good because it was funny when it was finished, and they sent me and Warner Brothers sent me on a tour to like colleges, and they would screen it, and the kids went crazy. It was so much fun. Like I would just walk in and people were going nuts, and they were 10 minutes into it. So I just assumed it was going to be as good as I really thought it was. And that was the nerve-wracking part, was that I didn't understand that if your movie doesn't make a fortune the first weekend, that your life's pretty much over, you know, as far as a filmmaker goes.
Right.
That's when it got nerve-wracking, because then it was like, oh, crap, this is over. I mean, I made my dream movie, and now no one saw it, and people hate me. And then you're like, oh, crud. But as far as filming it, I really was so grateful to have, like, a crew. It was so cool that I didn't feel pressure. I really didn't.
Why do you think... I'll ask you this, and maybe you have an answer for it. Why do you think it didn't catch on when, at the time it was released? I mean, there could be a variety of reasons, marketing or competition, or what do you think it was?
That's just a great question. I don't know. I think, first of all, I'm a nobody. It wasn't like it's a John Hughes movie. It's a stupid, savage Steve Holland, and I'm sure, you know, I just really don't know, except that I don't think people wanted to give it a chance, but... You know, there were some cool movies, even Porky's, well, you know, that's kind of a classic, but like Last American Virgin or something that a lot of people did give a chance to. So I was stunned that I didn't get more of a chance, you know. Also, I think that people thought it was pretty stupid. I have to admit, I think some people just didn't get it because it really was a little over the top as far as my dumb humor goes. But there's things like if you suddenly have a dancing hamburger, you know, well, you're asking the audience a lot, you know.
Yeah.
So I guess some of the audience walked out and said, there's a freaking dancing hamburger in this piece of crap movie. Don't go to it. You know, I don't know. But
they would see a dancing hamburger later when they're lighting up later on. So I mean, as far as I'm concerned.
But have you had to have noticed. I think you're being a little modest with us, but you had to have noticed that it has gained a following over the years. And when did you first notice that? When was your first clue that this movie has survived?
You know, really, it was when this is going to sound like I'm a million years old, but it was when the video store thing started happening, and every time I would go in and rent a movie, and it, my card says, you know, Savage D. Collins, because, you know, I'm desperate that someone will hopefully know my name. And normally, at like a Blockbuster or something, they do, and they go, you know what, we don't even have any of your movie, Better Off Dead, because it's all been stolen. Like, nobody had Better Off Dead anywhere, because everybody would rent it out and then keep it.
Yeah.
So that kind of made me feel like, wow, people are really, you know, stealing my movie. Great, I guess that's good. and then the real big thing was that HBO then was playing it so much that they just asked me to like host a special one night based on Better Off Dead and
right.
One Crazy Summer, and that's when I thought, wow, you know, I guess a lot of people are really seeing this because they're playing it a lot, and I know they play it a lot on Comedy Central, and it's neat that it's timeless. And you know why? It's still funny. I swear to God, those jokes are still stupidly funny.
Yeah, they are.
I know people that watch it all the time.
Yeah.
Oh, thanks, guys.
So tell me about, I'm always curious about this. I've asked a couple of people about it. The movies that were made for young people then, in that decade, this is a major theme for us when we're talking about 80s cinema. Like A Better Off Dead, there seems to be an innocence to them that's missing now from that genre of film. Do you find that that's the case, and why do you think that might be?
Do you mean like an American Pie or something like that? Do you mean teen movies in general?
Movies that we see now, I mean, I think Jamie and I had this conversation a couple of weeks ago on the show. The movies that we see now that would be are actually more about 20-somethings and even 30-somethings. There's not really a lot of teens anymore, and the ones that are for teens I'll be very frank with you, are bloody wretched.
Yeah, I agree. I don't really have an answer to that. The only thing I can think of is that maybe TV's taken over that. You know, I'm thinking like the One Tree Hills or something like that. I think teen angst, it's not cool to do like funny teen angst anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if it's because of that audience, the 80s audience. I'm sure it's something generational. I have to imagine that's what it is. It's just that there's enough teens in anxiety ready to laugh at themselves back in the 80s. But I don't see kids really laughing at themselves this much, that much these days. But, you know, I can't judge everybody. But I think TV's sort of handling it right now. That's my only idea, because you're right. Everything else is like 20 or 30 something. Like The Hangover back in the 80s would have been about, you know, a kid, you know, two 18, you know, 16-year-olds in a car and a summer they'd never forget.
Yeah,
but
exactly.
But that's not happening anymore, is it? So you're right. I haven't given it much thought, except that there's nothing that's really made me want to go see it. I mean, American Pie was pretty funny, you know, but it's funny because then that's been made into like 15 sequels because it's so ginormous for that genre.
And
but it's really it's the only one I can think of, you know, even a teen movie anymore.
Yeah.
And that's purely, well, no, I was going to say, it's got Gene Levy and stuff. I was going to say it's purely about sex and all that, but it's not. It's as, you know, goofy as, like, you know, Losing It or one of those ones from the 80s. So I'll give it some credit.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Let me ask you this, because you mentioned that that you wrote Better Off Dead based on experiences in your own life. So the real life counterparts of your ex girlfriend and the skiing athlete, did they recognize themselves in the film? Were you approached by either of them?
Yeah, you know, okay, it's so funny. The ski guy, it was weird. I was going back home and I got in one of those airport limo buses, you know, where you think there's like 20 people in this thing, and he got on and he sat right in front of me, and it was like, oh God, no. But luckily he didn't, you know, he really is like that character. He doesn't even know he's an ass, you know what I mean? So, but that was just, I was just sick to my, 'cause it was like a 45-minute ride from like, you know, JFK to Connecticut, and I was just sitting with this doofus, and he was exactly the same. And then, and as far as the girl that was the main girl, Beth, she, did contact me like a couple years later and said that like she was really bummed. I don't mean to sound mean, but she was sort of, I think she knew how insane I was and stuff, but she said that it really bummed her out, the whole movie. I don't think it was like she was like, I don't think she was sorry that what happened, but she thought the movie portrayed her pretty badly, but I didn't use her real name or anything. But but she said that she wanted to call to apologize. You know, she was like, I just feel like that's the way you saw it. It must have sucked so bad. And I was like, you know what? I've got a house now thanks to you and the misery you caused me. So it's fine. Don't worry.
All is forgiven.
All is fine. And then let's see, like Charles DeMar, played by Curtis Armstrong. He really is just like Curtis in that movie, and I've run into him every now and then. He's actually he does posters, like movie posters. Charles DeMar, the real guy, and he's fantastic. And so he got into the business here, and I ran into him a couple times. And otherwise, not so much the rest of the people, because now I've been living out here and stuff, so I've kind of lost everybody.
Well, you in spite of Better Off Dead not performing very well when it first came out, I mean, the opportunity to write and direct One Crazy Summer followed right away. I mean, how did that come about?
Well, that was part of the evil plan of one of my producers, Andy Meyer, who's a genius. He said to me, like, what if this doesn't do well? And I was like, well, that's ridiculous. Of course it's going to do well. And he said, you should really have in your pipeline, like, another movie. And so I just used to go to Cape Cod every summer, and I wanted to go to Cape Cod, and I didn't want to miss it that summer. So I wrote this movie that one's about 60%. Like, the grandma in there is real and stuff like that. And then my friends are real, like Egg and Stork and those guys. And that one, Better Off Dead, is purely biographical, but One Crazy Summer's got some real, I'm stretching it a little bit, but I've lost my train of thought completely. So Andy suggested that I, you know, have this other script, so I wrote, you know, One Crazy Summer, and then what happened was, like I said, we had these screenings of Better Off Dead, and they were so well received that the studio started to actually sort of bid on One Crazy Summer, which was really, like I said, a pretty 60% half-assed script. And I was sort of a little bit embarrassed to put it out there because it really wasn't that finished, you know. But I really wanted to do another movie. So sure enough, like the reaction of Better Off Dead caused a momentum, which was great, and people started to say my name out there, which is weird. And so there was a little bidding war on One Crazy Summer. And so then Warner's released, was going to release Better Off Dead, so I said, well, I better stick with them. So I stayed with them, and they were really nice and helpful on the movie, and they were fine. But, you know, like I said, it was funny that Better Off Dead came out, did not do well, and then about, I don't know what it was, 5 months later, One Crazy Summer was supposed to come out, and then I was like, oh, God, I got this whole company that feels like I let them down, and I got this other movie coming out that one of the executives at Warner Brothers said was like the most vile movie they've ever seen. Which One Crazy Summer.
They don't get out much, do they?
No, I was so stunned by that. I said, yeah, the stuff that I've seen.
Whenever someone says that, you always got to wonder, when was the last time you left your domicile?
I mean, they were, seriously, One Crazy Summer, which is dumber than Better Off Dead, they said, this guy said, was like, compared it to Caligula as far as, like, filth. I swear to God. Yes, he was like, it's as filthy as Caligula. It's sad, but the guy's gone. But it was just so painful because then I knew I wasn't going to get any, you know, press or any kind of, like, advertisement or anything.
But you did a very funny movie after that, though, How I Got into College, which is a very funny movie.
I'm so glad you liked that one.
We liked that. It came out when I was a freshman in college, but I could relate to a lot of it. It just, trust me, the college admissions process does a number on, I don't care who you are, it does a number on you.
No, that's true. I've learned a lot about that.
The only other movie I saw that kind of reminded me of that was a movie actually in the last decade, The Perfect Score, a little movie about like stealing the SAT scores. But I just liked How I Got into College because it was like watching the trailers, and then we watched it, and it was like, hey, I could relate to a lot of that.
Oh, that's so great. That one was I had done my first TV series that failed, and then they were towing my trailer away at 20th Century Fox, and then one of the bigwigs there, you know, saw me moping, and he said, you know, hey, I got this movie, because you do those teen movies. It's like, you know, he didn't know that I was a failed teen movie maker. And so he said, you know, we've got this script, and it's not going so good, and so they were going to replace the director, bless her heart. And I read it, and it wasn't that funny, you know, and it was sort of, it was supposed to be 12 Angry Men, for registration, for college registration people, college admissions people.
Right.
And I was like, wow, really? You know, that's certain. They're like, yeah, we're thinking about adding some kids. You know, I was like, well, it's probably a good idea that you add some kids to it. And so they did, and we did our best. You know, I mean, I kind of had to write, you know, a good 40% of it with my new cast of people. And I think we did okay. You know, it's just that it was like 2 weeks behind the second I got it. But I had a really cool cast of, like, Laura Flynn Boyle and Anthony Edwards and this guy, you know, Charlie Rocket, who's really funny and bitter. Unfortunately, he's died. But he was, like, the funniest guy I've ever met, Charlie Rocket. He was unbelievable. And so thank you for saying that. You know, I sort of – my reviews sort of on that one were sort of like, well, this is the nail in the coffin of Savage Steve Holland. And I was like, well, I guess that's it. I got my third try, you know.
But you still – I mean, you're still directing. I don't trust everything I see on IMDb.
No,
I've been burned so many times on
been burned horribly.
But I have,
you better ask me. Go ahead.
Yeah,
I do have to ask you to confirm or deny.
Okay.
Are you involved in something in Howard Stern's Porky's?
No, that's funny. There was a second there. There was a second. I did meet with Howard, and I did have a really cool meeting with him, and I pitched him an idea for it, and I did get paid to write a script. But the thing is, there's a go-between company, too. I had to get approval from him, but there's this go-between company that I'll tell you where this went wrong. I handed in a script, and they said, and I don't know if you know this, but I used to direct Lizzie McGuire, that little Disney Channel, the sweet little show.
Mm-hmm.
And the producer at this executive at this company that I was handing in this Howard Stern Presents Porky's script to, he said, we want it to be more like Lizzie McGuire. And then I said, I think you've got the wrong guy, and I don't think...
Wait a second. Wait, they want Porky's to be more like Lizzie McGuire?
Yeah. They wanted it to be written more like Lizzie McGuire with clever, you know, charming little dialogue, and, you know, I was doing a thing about... I decided to go for it, and I kind of did this thing. It's a long, boring story, but it was, you know, as filthy as I would expect Howard to want it, you know?
Right.
So when they said that I had to bring it down to Lizzie McGuire level, I said, you know what, I think we're at a really weird place. And then, so I'm done with that project, and it never happened. And then what did happen was that they did, not Howard Stern, this little company, Howard ditched them. He's not involved at all anymore, and I'm not involved anymore. But they did make a Porky's, and I don't even want to say anything about it, but you'll have to see for yourself.
That's fine.
I just have to say something, though, and I know this is off topic, but William Goldman was right. No one knows anything out there. If they want to make Porky's more like Lizzie McGuire, I would think the thing is, no, let's make it more like Chasey Lane, Jenna Jameson. But okay,
exactly.
I don't know anything, obviously. Lizzie McGuire.
Howard Stern's.
Wow.
Howard Stern's Lizzie McGuire. That's a great idea.
You could see how that's one of the times in your life, in your career, where you just say, okay, I'm willing to, like, really embarrass myself by doing a really sexy, you know, this is about my Porky's was in Vegas, and there was going to be a porn star convention, and that's what all these guys were going to on a bachelor party.
I would be out for that. I mean,
yeah, and it was fun, and then they had to destroy the Vegas version of Porky's, and it was really big, you know, and then they were like, no, we just want to make it a simpler, like Lizzie McGuire, and I was like, I just feel like we're just totally at odds here, and I love you guys.
Really?
Bye. Yeah.
Wow.
Well, when you see what they came up with, I can't wait. And maybe you'll see it before. It's going to be on DVD or something soon, but you'll see what I don't, like I said, I don't want to say anything mean or not mean or
okay,
whatever.
You're very good.
We'll take care of that for you. But what are you working on now? What's in your future too?
Well, you know what? I got in this niche of the Disney Channel and Nickelodeon, and now I have kids, so it's okay to be in that niche. And it's funny because some of the shows. Some of the producers actually were big fans of Better Off Dead, and it's just funny that, like, even Lizzie McGuire was, like, about these little animated, you know, Lizzie's come to life and talk, and the producer was like, well, that was inspired by Better Off Dead. And I was really, you know, touched by that, so I went and did a bunch of those. And then I'm in this pretty fun, you know, it's a niche, like I said, it's kind of a tweener thing. It's a lot cleaner than I'm used to, but if you look at my old movies, like, there's nothing really dirty in them or anything like that. There's no Caligula factor. For instance, now, like, I'm doing The Fairly Odd Parents, which is this really crazy cartoon on Nickelodeon that we're making into a live-action movie for kids. Again, it's a directed-to-DVD kind of thing. But at least then nobody hates me the first weekend, you know, if it doesn't do well.
Well, let me tell you, Savage. People love you, whether you know it or not, because they love these movies, especially Better Off Dead. And it's going to mean a whole lot to a lot of people to hear from you on this show.
Yeah, it will, definitely.
Oh, that's so sweet. Where are you guys located?
It's strange because this being the internet, I'm in Florida and Jerry's in Maryland.
Yeah.
Oh, cool. That's so neat. Right, you guys sound like you're in the same room. That's really neat. Because I was going to say, like, one thing that's been happening, which is really super cool, is there's apparently one print of Better Off Dead out there. And I've had like three showings of it now where people have put together these screenings of it, and one was up in San Francisco. And there was like 400 people there. It was with Harold and Maude played, and Bud Cort came, and they had a double feature. And it was like, you know, I brought Diane Franklin and Curtis Armstrong. And people, I have another one out here that's coming up later in the summer. Both movies are playing, and, you know, it's going to be kind of a big deal. But I'm hoping that that'll happen in other states. And I would love to meet you guys. I would love you to see it. And I'm just saying, if you're in L.A.,
absolutely, we would love that.
We would love that.
And when the other screenings come up, email me so I can tell our listeners about it, because they're rabid for Better Off Dead, let me tell you.
Oh, that's sweet. Okay, cool. That's cool. Yeah, I'll keep you in my inbox, and then I'll just let you know when it's happening. But they've been so much fun. Like, they get bigger and bigger every year, and it's very flattering, and it's really fun, and I just love to, you know, it's funny, they did a thing sort of like a question and answer while the movie was playing. It's like, you know, Mystery Science Theater kind of thing. And so we call out stuff. But what was funny was the audience was really enjoying the movie so much, it was kind of dumb to, like, stop and say, and that was the guy that was, you know, it's just like people really enjoy the movie so much, it almost seemed like dumb to interrupt it. But I'll let you know when things are happening. And I just really appreciate your enthusiasm for my movie, because it still means a lot to me, and I so appreciate people that like it.
Okay, that is Savage Steve Holland, writer-director of Better Off Dead. That's part of our Summer of 1985 at the Movies series. Tune in next week for three more installments of the series, featuring Joe Dante, director of Explorers, Alexandra Paul, lead actress in American Flyers. And it's all climaxing in our Wednesday night finale to the series with Leah Thompson from Back to the Future and a special critical roundtable on that entire summer. Also, earlier this week, we spoke to talents like Steve Guttenberg from Cocoon and Joel Schumacher, director of St. Elmo's Fire, and Dana Wheeler-Nicholson, the lead actress in the comedy smash hit Fletch. So don't miss those shows either. If you've missed any of those, you can catch them on archive. Thanks so much for joining us tonight, and we'll see you back here Monday night at 10 p.m. Eastern.